This is episode 18 of the Rio Grande Foundation's Tipping Point New Mexico podcast. I'm Paul Gessing.
And I'm Dowd Muska.
We're president and research director of the Rio Grande Foundation, New Mexico's free market think tank. You can find out more about the foundation at riograndefoundation.org. This and every week, we'll be talking to you about public policy issues facing New Mexico. Our guest today is Heath Houseman from nmpolitics.net. Welcome to the show, Heath.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Briefly, nmpolitics.net, you've been at it a long time there, Heath. Tell us a little bit about it and what you see your role in New Mexico policy and politics as being.
Sure. Let me say first, it's nonpartisan. And when I say that, I actually mean it, unlike some other. I certainly have my own personal ideology, but honestly believe that 100 senators in a room come up with something better than me individually, you know. So I really believe in the marketplace of ideas. I'm based in Las Cruces, so it has that kind of regional perspective that a lot of the statewide media doesn't. I focus heavily on things like transparency. Lately, the border's been a hot topic, but transparency is kind of one of the long-term things that I'm always focusing on.
No doubt about it. And yeah, we've done a lot of work on transparency as well, at least in terms of keeping government transparent. There are probably disagreements maybe in terms of other entities and what levels of transparency they might be held to. But certainly, I think we can all agree that when it comes to your tax dollars and mine, that those should be transparent. And Dowd, one of our favorite topics to discuss here on the Tipping Point New Mexico podcast, and generally just any time over a drink, cocktail party, water cooler, wherever we may be, Spaceport America.
Keeps coming up, doesn't it?
Yeah. You've been looking at Spaceport America closer than most have, and Heath has as well. I'll let you start off with the conversation about transparency and public records at Spaceport America.
Yeah, great to have you, Heath. And reiterate, you know, a plug for nmpolitics.net. I think you pretty much run nearly everything we send you. And of course, we're from the free market perspective. So anyone accusing Heath Houseman of may personally be a liberal, but I support your comment, marketplace of ideas, all 100%. You are a true believer in the marketplace of ideas, and you've always been great to our organization, letting us get our message out, and just thank you for that. The Spaceport, you and another journalist, Patrick Hayes, down at Channel 9 in El Paso over the last year and a half, have been fighting for the public's right to know about what's going on with that Spaceport Authority. They spend money, the people working there, allegedly working there, get very, very well compensated positions, and you both have run into some trouble. So you've got the New Mexico-based journalist and you've got the Texas-based journalist fighting the Spaceport Authority on transparency. Walk us through the troubles you've had obtaining those documents that should be publicly available.
Yeah, I kind of got into it by accident last February. A couple people from the Spaceport called me out of the blue, just wanted to know if I had any questions that I wanted them to answer, and so I asked about money. And they didn't want to talk about money. I want to know about rent payments, right? And, oh, not those questions. So that's a good way to get a journalist to start a big investigative series. And I filed some records requests. They said they had an economic impact study that showed that the state was getting back $20 in economic return for every dollar spent out of the state's general fund. And I requested all documents that factored into that analysis. And I was really exact. You know, you say it's X million dollars from tourism. I want every document that factored into that. And I was expecting a stack of documents, even maybe getting back a response that my request was overly burdensome and it was going to take them months to compile all the documents. And instead, they said there are no documents, which is interesting when you've clearly done a bunch of math and reviewed finances of a state agency for there not to be documents. So I requested lease agreements with their customers. There are five what they call permanent tenants. Virgin Galactic is the most prominent of those. They redacted financial and other information from four of the five. Virgin Galactic's was released unredacted. Virgin Galactic didn't have a problem with that kind of transparency, but and I don't honestly know that the other companies had a problem with it, but the spaceport had a problem with it and redacted financial information, information about where at the spaceport these other companies were doing business, were they at the vertical launch site, the runway, the horizontal launch site. So it made it difficult to, as I'm trying to investigate the economic impact claims and figure out if there's any validity to this or not, it made it difficult to do that. In the course of that, I discovered that they had blocked me on Twitter.
That's my favorite.
Spaceport America's Twitter account.
You're mean, yeah, Heath. You're mean.
Right? And it came up right at the time that President Trump was being sued for this, and a federal court has since ruled that government officials can't do this, that it's an unconstitutional violation of your First Amendment rights. That may work its way up through the courts, but that's where it is right now. So I turned around and filed a request then, another records request for their list of every account that they have blocked on Twitter, which is something you can access in your Twitter account. If you've blocked people from seeing your tweets or responding to them, you can go look at that list. And so my contention is it's a government record then. And I requested it just to see who was on it. They unblocked me on Twitter, but their response was that IPRA, the State Inspection of Public Records Act, does not reference Twitter. And they were not going to give me the list. So those are among the problems. There were others that I experienced. Patrick Hayes experienced some. There's a citizen in Truth or Consequences, Ron Fenn, who also had some problems that I encountered and wrote about while I was doing this. Patrick and I both filed complaints with the state attorney general's office. The AG determined that there were violations by the Spaceport Authority in Patrick Hayes' requests, I think last year. Mine I filed a little later, and it was more complicated, and they just came back about a week and a half ago and said there were four violations by the Spaceport Authority in my case. And that's a non-legally binding opinion. It's a formal opinion from the state attorney general, but it's enforcement of the Inspection Public Records Act is only civil. And I would be the harmed party in that. So it'd be up to me to bring a lawsuit. So on Friday, I filed a lawsuit against the Spaceport Authority seeking release of all those records.
Great timing. Way to do that right before we sit down with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
He timed it based on the podcast. Right. Well, now, Heath, tell us about you filed suit. That costs money. You're a relatively small operation, not a giant media conglomerate. I mean, you're really taking these people, you're going down to the last ditch, even if it means having to spend some of your own money.
You know, it is. And I operate on a really tight budget. Some months I feel like I'm right on the edge of a cliff and I'm not sure I'm going to make it to pay my bills at the end of the month. And in politics is mostly supported by donations from people. So, but it's important, right? And you can't, I have very rarely seen a government agency act so flagrantly with disregard for the Inspection of Public Records Act. And on top of that, the thing that especially got me in this case was after the state attorney general had already said publicly that the Spaceport Authority violated the Inspection of Public Records Act in Patrick Hayes' case, after I had documented violations with Ron Fenn and Truth of Consequences and with Patrick Hayes and with me, and specifically publicly asked the state legislature to do something about it because the Spaceport Authority has been asking them for years to give them greater secrecy.
Right.
The legislature gave them that. And there was this awful contradiction in here's the Spaceport Authority telling me they already have the right to withhold things like redacting rent and fee information from lease agreements. And then they go to the legislature after that and say, we need you to give us the legal right to withhold this information. It's like, wait, did you have it or not? Which, honestly might help my court case. But the legislature during the session, Representative McCamley during the interim committees last year asked some questions about transparency during a hearing. But during the session, when state legislators were actually tangibly considering a bill to let Spaceport America have greater secrecy, legislators didn't bring up any of the transparency problems that the spaceport had. It just felt like as a body, that group of elected officials totally blew it and disregarded their duty to ask hard questions.
There's a couple things that kind of jumped out from the earlier part of the conversation. One is, I had no idea that when you're on Twitter that blocking someone meant they couldn't view your tweets. I thought it was just a blocking from the interaction. But if Donald Trump blocks somebody, a journalist, for example, that would never happen. But if he were to do that, then they could not see anything put out by the president of the United States. That's what you're stating, right?
That's right.
Okay.
I'll tell you, former Governor Bill Richardson blocked me on Twitter a long time ago, and I can log out of my Twitter account, and if I'm not logged into my account that he's blocked and I'm just looking at Twitter not logged in, I can see his tweets. But occasionally I'll see another journalist retweet something that Bill Richardson tweets, and it just tells me it's unavailable.
Interesting. So, fascinating.
So, and he has blocked me to this day from seeing his tweets.
And before he's making the right enemies, Paul.
Yeah, well done. And the other thing is, so you started the conversation out by saying that they approached you. The spaceport approached you about saying, you know, essentially, do you need anything? Like, what did they expect you to ask? They know you're a real journalist. They know that you might have real questions for them. Who comes to somebody like that and doesn't have a willingness to discuss real issues with you and share real information? Like, that almost is too dumb to even understand why they would do that.
Well, I think that's a really good question. And it's that whole series of events, which if I didn't think they were so egregious, I would almost think were funny, that they came to me, then they didn't answer my questions, then the violation after violation were just horrific, and then the legislature totally disregarded its duty to hold them accountable. And IPRA is clear in saying it is the policy of the state of New Mexico that the public should have access to the greatest amount of information possible. Exemptions should be narrow, they should be rare, and the idea that the Spaceport Authority can just make it up as they go along and say, we already have the right to do this, we're not going to give this to Heath, and then go to the legislature and say, we don't have the right to do it, we need you to give it to us, and to have the legislature just say, sure, have more secrecy instead of asking the hard questions and holding them accountable, I mean, that's why there's a lawsuit today, because I waited for the legislature to do something, and they didn't do it. So it leaves it to me to do it.
Paul, I think the answer to your question is they wanted what they've been getting for 10 years, which is puff coverage by the New Mexico media. And, you know, is there an entity in New Mexico that has less reason to be non-compliant with this Inspection of Public Records Act, less reason, you know, to be arrogant about and to make these kind of wild claims that they consistently do? Tracking these people is almost a full-time job. We're going to have to move on, Heath, but
well,
I just like to
hold
just
on. I want to ask one more point about the spaceport. And yeah, I know we could sit here all afternoon about this. And I know Dowd has a lot of questions for you, but have you been surprised at how compliant? And it's obviously the records issue and public access to that information is one thing, but without having launched a single, you know, manned spacecraft in New Mexico without really anything to show for what's getting on to 10 years of its existence, the spaceport was able to secure a new hangar and significant new operation dollars in the last legislative session. It seems like the spaceport is that just dream that refuses to die, and the legislature on a bipartisan basis, it's worth noting, seems to be incredibly supportive of this. Do you, you know, put on your political science hat on and figure out why the heck is this?
My sense is this. The media had largely not covered the spaceport for years, me included. I dropped the ball for years. They called me out of the blue. You know, I did this 6-part series. It was about 15,000 words or so. I mean, it was really comprehensive. I ran it. The Las Cruces Sun News ran it. It got a lot of statewide attention. It got some TV attention up in Albuquerque. Suddenly people are talking about it. They also got a new CEO, I think in 2016, Dan Hicks.
Right.
He is very good at his job. He's charming. He's shrewd. You know, all the good things. He's up there with the legislature selling this thing. And Virgin Galactic started looking like maybe they were going to do something, and This year, they've had several successful test flights that got them past the point where they had a fatal accident in 2014. My sense is Dan Hicks did a good job of selling to the legislature it's finally going to happen. And from talking to legislators, many who don't want to go on the record, my sense is they thought, well, maybe it is going to happen. This is their last chance. And so my sense is the legislature was willing to give them some more this year, but Virgin Galactic's got to keep its promise and actually get into space this year, or they have to sign another one of these big companies who starts doing something tangible, Blue Origin, for example. I would be surprised if the legislature is this friendly next year if they gave this kind of money last year and another IPRA exemption, and then nothing happens for 12 months.
Heath, I'll send you the links that I've been writing.
But is that overly optimistic? I don't know.
I'll send you the links I've been writing about the launch companies that have been avoiding the spaceport and picking all sorts of other locations. But just one final point. Paul and I were being given a tour of the Roswell International Air Center, which in some ways is a lot like the spaceport. It's a governmental entity that has lease, you know, percentage of its budget is covered by lease income. And we were talking to the Mayor Kintyre down there, and I mentioned the fact that you had had these troubles, the transparency, and these lease agreements released heavily redacted with, you know, the black ink blocking out so much. And his head snapped over to me. We were in the back of an SUV being driven around, and he said, They're not fully, you know, compliant with the Freedom of Information Law. They don't release the lease agreements. We do that at the Air Center completely. I mean, the public has a right to know this stuff. Yeah. And so it might be interesting moving forward for you to compare those two entities in terms of one's compliance versus the other. The mayor was literally, I mean, his mouth was open. He was shocked at the failure to comply with that. I guess he hadn't read your coverage yet. So the facilities are very similar, but they have very different approaches to the public's right to know.
You know, and Kintyre was always good when he was in the legislature on transparency issues. And that's my understanding is they told us when they sold taxpayers in Donian and Sierra counties on this tax increase, think of it like an airport.
Right.
Public owns the infrastructure, private companies lease it. My understanding is I could IPRA, you know, Southwest Airlines contract with the Albuquerque Sunport and get a copy of it. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be redacted. I haven't done it, but I was told that. So I'm not 100% sure that's right. But that's the comparison they asked us to think through when voters here agreed to fund the spaceport. And it is very interesting now to have them say, wait, space companies are different and they need more secrecy. No, you're the one who told us to think about it.
Heath, are you saying that the sales job on the spaceport 10 years ago wasn't completely on the level in New Mexico? I'm shocked.
I actually think it was a good comparison, and now they're trying to backpedal on it because they don't like the transparency aspect. But I think that's the problem.
I've often said that
they need to be transparent then.
The spaceport was like building an airport before the Wright brothers took their first flight. So I've made that analogy many times myself.
I've heard you make that analogy.
Well, good, you're listening. All right. Well, we'll finally leave the spaceport alone. And there is a lot going on in southern New Mexico. As we kind of said before the interview, it is in many ways, I think, the political epicenter of New Mexico. And you really are uniquely positioned down there because of the vagaries of New Mexico's media markets to have your finger on the pulse of what's going on in Las Cruces and Doña Ana County. You have a tax increase vote that's going on right now via the mail. It's a pretty significant property tax increase, and Las Cruces has already seen their tax rates go up tremendously. I saw a document online talking about their the hold harmless, which is essentially a way that local governments are fleecing their taxpayers to make up for future losses of revenue, and Las Cruces is cashing in like everybody else, and yet they're asking for more money from the taxpayers. So why don't you share us a little bit with what's kind of going on in Las Cruces local politics?
Well, it's a city that at this point, the city council has all Democrats except for one independent. And I'm a big fan of divided governance, not because it paralyzes things, but because that creates a better watchdog system. And so, you know, anytime you have all Republicans or all Democrats on a governing board, I generally don't think that's healthy. But we've had that situation, you know, with an extreme majority for Democrats on the city council for more than a decade. I mean, honestly, progressives are really good at organizing here, and Republicans are really not. And so it's their fault as much as anybody else's. There is not, some people are going to hate that I say this out loud, but it's not the first time. We do not have a very strong Republican Party in Doniana County. They consistently put people on the ballot that voters are not going to pick in a purple state or in a blue-leaning city where people are clearly willing to vote for Republicans, like Susana Martinez when she was district attorney. She didn't get along with the Republican Party here when she was district attorney because she thought they were too extreme. So I have long thought this city has elected representation that is more blue or left-leaning than the views of people here. But that's because of good organizing by people who want to get out the vote on the left and not good organizing by people on the right who want to get out the vote.
Well, there's no doubt that the left is...
So you see things like this.
Yeah. The left is very organized in Doniana County. There's no question about that. And I can point to the recall election a few years ago when there was a conservative effort to recall some city councilors that got very personal very quickly. And I quite honestly am not up on all the details, but I know that it had a huge impact and kind of further shifting that the political situation down there to the left.
Heath, is there
any... Yeah, I think there's... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to try to dig a little deeper on that in terms of the, you know, obviously organizing and the party politics is important, but are there demographic, cultural, economic changes happening in Metro Las Cruces, Southern New Mexico that are pushing things in a more democratic, liberal direction as well? I mean, are there sort of underlying causes too?
Yeah, I certainly think that's a dynamic. Las Cruces is a city that maybe in the last two decades has really grown. I was going to say grown up, and I don't necessarily mean the opposite is negative, but it's become a more urban center, right? It's in the 1970s, Las Cruces was still a farm town with 30,000 people. And by the 90s, it was 60, 70, 80. And now it's 101 or 2,000 today. Farming is becoming more difficult. The land is being bought off. We have fewer farms. It is becoming more of a commercial center, shopping, medical, and otherwise. And you know, that tends to happen as places become more urban, states tend to become more liberal. So I think that's certainly a dynamic. And that's why I said I was going to use the language Las Cruces is growing up. And I don't necessarily mean like the change is positive or the opposite would be negative. It's just what's happening here is that it's becoming more urban.
Well, Heath, I was thinking on the flip side, your phrase is apropos as well, because it's known as a university town. And, you know, the economy, the kind of population is diversifying away from being kind of solely reliant on the university to me, you didn't mention retirees. Is that a group that you see growing? And normally you associate retirees with a more conservative mindset. So is that something that you think could start to shift things the other way, or is it just liberal retirees moving in there?
That's a good question. And I do think that the progressive movement, just knowing some of those folks, it's a lot of retirees that are in that group. So those are more liberal retirees. I think the most active, visible retirees we see moving in here in the political realm tend to be part of that progressive movement. Why is Las Cruces attracting more liberal retirees when other places attract more conservative ones? I'm not sure. That's a good question. I never thought about that, to be honest.
Well, as somebody who looks at these issues and the trends facing New Mexico, you know, our population is relatively stagnant. We're seeing an outflow of young, educated New Mexicans and an inflow of retirees to the state of New Mexico. Now, the $64,000 question is, are the retirees moving here more conservative than the young people leaving here? And is that a long-term trend that's going to have impacts to make the state as a whole more conservative? Or are they... You know, without throwing California under the bus, but wait, you got to love throwing California under the bus.
Go ahead.
Is, you know, a lot of those folks in these Western states, you know, the Colorados, the Arizonas are seeing an influx of Californians to the extent that New Mexico sees a similar influx. What does that entail? So these are broad questions that I don't pretend you or I have the answer to. I just think it's interesting food for thought.
No, and you have correctly pointed out repeatedly in the last few months that Las Cruces's unemployment rate is stagnant when the other metro areas in the city are growing, or at least Las Cruces is one of the places that is holding the state's average down. And that's, I've been thinking about, what is it down here? Why is that? And, you know, it's not like it's liberal policies, because Santa Fe's economy is doing better and Santa Fe is more liberal than Las Cruces. So I'm not sure, but you've asked some really good questions in recent months that have me thinking about the city I live in and how it fits into the bigger picture of the state.
Heath, I think Santa Fe might be more liberal than Berkeley, if you really want to get specific. But I want to ask you, we are running low on time, but I wanted to ask you about the second congressional district down there. Interesting race. You know, I have Steve Pierce stepping aside, a guy who, you know, really brags about his ability. And I think if the evidence is there, the evidence is there to reach into traditionally non-Republican demographics. Talks about how the progress he's made getting folks voting for him on Indian tribal lands, for example, and is quite proud of that fact. But, you know, we've got a real Donnybrook of a race going on. We have Ms. Paul, I'm sure she would want to be called Ms. Torres Small versus Representative Yvette Harrell. Just a couple days ago, I think it was the money race update came out, and the Democrat had something like a 5-to-1 advantage over in terms of cash on hand. So let's pick your brain a little bit about where you see that going. Of course, the political prognosticators say, well, that's just a conservative district, and, you know, Democrat doesn't have a chance. I'm not so sure looking at the numbers.
Yeah, I wrote a column, I think, in January saying, there's going to be a blue wave this year in the election, but don't expect it to snag that congressional district. And I almost declared that race over. I'm not quite as sure anymore. Steve Pierce is unique in that he's got the best constituent services in the congressional delegation right now. And I know folks who live in a place like Anthony who will say, my county commissioners ignore me, my state legislators ignore me. But when I had this issue, I called Steve Pierce, and he took care of it. He'll go to any forum. He'll talk to anybody. He doesn't run away from that kind of stuff. Is Yvette Harrell Steve Pierce? No, I don't think she is. And that's one of the things that has since made me think a little more carefully about this race, is I honestly expected the Republican Party to put up their best, whether that was Aubrey Dunn, or there were rumors for a while that John Sanchez, you know, might come down this way, or I don't know who it would have been exactly, but I expected a big name candidate with a statewide network. And we just, the Republicans just didn't put that up. And in the meantime, especially emulating from Las Cruces, this big progressive center, there is a huge amount of energy behind a Democratic candidate. She is raising a ton of money. You know, I'm still skeptical that Democrats could hold this seat long term. You know, Harry Teague held it for 2 years once. Is that the kind of year we're going to have? I don't think Democrats or, liberals, progressives have done enough organizing, structural organizing, not necessarily political organizing, in communities outside of Doniana County in the second congressional district to have the kind of base to hold this seat long term. Could they, is this an unusual election year where they might win it and hold on to it temporarily? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's an interesting race to me. Right now, I'm not sure what to think about it.
Well, CD2 is obviously a very interesting race down there. And the dynamic, of course, between the oil patch and the more conservative region in Southeast, and then the more liberal region down your way in Las Cruces, and even over to Silver City, that's a huge, you know, is that the last bastion of conservative political representation in New Mexico? And with that kind of being the entree, of course, you're a political junkie like the rest of us. The governor's race and Congressman Pierce moving or attempting to move up into that against another sitting representative. What I know what you're going to say about what's happening in Las Cruces. I know the activism and the excitement is all going to be on Michelle's side of things. But kind of, are you seeing any trends developing down there that might be missed from the Duke City here?
You know, I think the only thing I could say as somebody who pays attention to politics from this part of the state is, I mean, I just said good things about Steve Pierce and his constituent services, and I think that's all true. And the second congressional district, like the other two, has more registered Democrats than Republicans. But down here, they're Democrats who regularly will vote for a Republican for Congress. Steve Pierce has run for statewide office before, and it didn't work. And we are in a blue wave this year. So, you know, he's doing the right things. He had a, you know, a big endorsement from a Democrat last week. I think he's running the campaign he needs to. I am not convinced that New Mexico as a whole will vote for him like this congressional district will, especially in a year where Donald Trump's approval rating is plummeting in New Mexico. And I don't see New Mexico being in much of a mood for Republicans this year, for better or worse. I said earlier, I'm a fan of divided governance, but I don't see the state being super excited about Republican candidates this year. So who knows? If anybody can make a race out of it, it is Steve Pierce, but I am also skeptical that he can get it close enough that he could actually win.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll all find out in November, and maybe we'll have you back on to discuss sure. those chances or the post-mortem, and we'll see if we're dealing with a blue, true New Mexico, which has a lot of people I know very concerned about that kind of political homogenization in the state. But we'll cross those bridges when we get there.
I have certainly heard off the record some Republican operatives say they suspect we may be moving into a time in New Mexico where the biggest political division is between conservative Democrats and progressive Democrats, more like a California. Is that what we're moving into? I don't know. I don't know how to read the electorate at all after the 2016 election. I think we'll see what happens. But if I'm wrong about that sort of prediction I just made, I'll be happy to come back on and talk about that.
Oh, well, we'll hold your feet to the fire. But we already saw in June that the progressives are kind of weeding out those more moderate conservative Democrats. Yeah. So that's a whole separate issue. Well, thank you for your time, Heath Houseman. Mm-hmm. And the website is nmpolitics.net. Heath is you're not a nonprofit. You are a for-profit guy trying to do what you can. So tell people how they can support what you're doing.
Yeah, I do run this as a business. Honestly, that's changed my perspective on business a lot. I pay my taxes, all that stuff. I ask people to donate. I don't charge a required subscription fee because I believe people should have access to information about their government, regardless of their ability to pay. So what I do is tell people, but you got to give something or I can't do this. So give what you can afford. So instead of a subscription, it's a donation. It's not tax deductible, but I could charge you a subscription instead. So how about just give what you can afford? You can go to nmpolitics.net. There's a red button on the top that says donate. Click there. Even $10 helps me out.
All right. Ditto for Rio Grande Foundation.
Absolutely.
thanks for your time, Heath. We'll see you in cyberspace, if nothing else.
Thanks, Heath.
Sounds good. Thanks.
This has been another episode of Tipping Point New Mexico. Thank you for tuning in. Every week we are trying to make New Mexico a better place for you and your children. Thank you.